Campus FM presents Treasures from Malta. This episode was originally recorded for the Treasures from Malta podcast series, produced by Fondazione Patrimonio Malti. Hello and welcome to season 4 of the Treasures from Malta podcast, a podcast series produced by Fondazione Patrimonio Malti. I am Francesca Balzan, an artist and art historian who goes back a long way with Patrimonio. In this podcast I meet even more of Malta's living treasures. I meet artists, collectors and historians with some Malta connection, and we have conversations about their life in art. My guest today is a celebrity photographer of Maltese descent. His roots are in art and art history, but early on in his career, he took up photography as his medium, working his way up from photography assistant to a fully-fledged freelance photographer. For decades now, he has specialized in portraiture and fashion. Throughout his career, he has produced iconic images of practically all the most celebrated actors and models of our time, sometimes revisiting these sitters through different shoots over the years and charting their changes like an old friend. His portraits have appeared on numerous posters of blockbuster films, and he has also shot fashion campaigns for many of the top houses and international fashion magazines. But deep down, he remains an artist, producing incredibly striking images that have been shown and are collected by prestigious international galleries and museums worldwide. Lorenzo Ajus, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Fran. Thanks for inviting me on. I'm looking forward to our interview.
Lorenzo, where are you speaking to us from right now?
I'm at home in Los Angeles at the moment, just starting my day and starting my week with you guys.
While we're finishing off Monday here in Malta. Is your studio in Los Angeles as well?
I don't have a studio. I've never had a studio, actually. And the reason for that is because I travel so much. There was never any reason for me to be in one place. I've always traveled around the world. So I'm kind of fortunate, really, that I don't have that responsibility.
So you're a world traveler, and yet your roots are in Malta. Your parents are from Malta, and your name, Lorenzo, instantly takes me to Virgo, which is the ancient port town of Malta. Now, the patron saint there in Virgo is Saint Lawrence, and you'd find at least one Lorenzo in every Virgo family, especially in pre-war Malta. In fact, I've got a few Lorenzos in my own family as well. Tell me about your Maltese roots.
My mother was born in Sliema. My father was born in Valletta. They met during the pretty much just after the Second World War. You know, we had a kind of very early tragedy in our family because I think my grandparents, my father's parents, were the first people to die in Malta. I'm trying to remember the town. But anyway, a plane fell on their house. So the whole family of seven children was split up. Our history there has been a bit of a tragic history. But they met in the 50s, and then my father joined the army, the English army. And so then we started up the process of traveling. So I've been traveling all my life from the day I was born with my family, my mother and my father. And we traveled to many countries wherever he was based. You know, I still have lots of family in Malta, and I visit them whenever I can occasionally. You know, I try and get there every year or second year. And I love it. I love it dearly. It is like, although I grew up there, it is like going home. It's a really bizarre connection. And I can just feel it in the energy of my personality when I go there. And I seem to fit in very well. I love it. It's a treat to go back.
Lorenzo, how did you get into photography?
Well, I was at art school in England. I was studying fine art, wanting to be more a painter, be a fine artist. but decided kind of I didn't want to be a starving artist, and it just seemed that art was such a kind of difficult profession, and I knew artists at the time and they all seemed to be kind of very poor and struggling. So I, you know, one of my great loves was photography. So I started to do photography and just fell in love with that. I moved to London when I was 18 and started to assist photographers. So I was fortunate enough to meet some really amazing photographers, celebrated photographers that started to use me as their assistant. Mm-hmm. And that's really how I got into it. But I still apply a lot of my creative artistic painting process to my photography. So lighting is very important to me, you know, and composition and all of those things.
In fact, we'll get to that in a moment, because I really want to delve into your art and art history roots. I believe you studied at the University of East Anglia.
Yes.
So you were living outside of London and then moved to London when you started as a photography assistant. But at what stage did you turn professional?
The process from being an assistant to becoming a photographer is a very slow process, because they overlap, because, you know, at one point you're making a living from assisting and you've got all of your photographers that you work with, and then all of a sudden you have to fly the nest and start going after your own clients, which is not easy. So I assisted for about 6 years in England, in London mainly, and then I just started to put a portfolio together and then started to see clients and slowly start to build up a reputation that way.
Mm-hmm. You make it sound pretty easy, but I'm sure it was incredibly challenging, because there is a lot of competition, especially in a place like London, where a lot of the top photographers tend to be working. Going fast forward into present times, you've since made countless images of all the A-list celebrities practically, and all the best-known actors and actresses. But way back, your lucky break seems to have been with Trainspotting. Can you tell us how that happened?
I started working for a company called Polygram, which is a film company. And I just went in to see them with my portfolio, and someone took a liking to me. And they liked my energy and they liked my pictures. So they gave me a small job, and then it kind of built up from there. It was a slow process. And then on that particular job they invited me to come to the Cannes Film Festival and be their photographer, which sounds a lot more glamorous than it actually was. And I used to photograph the events and go to the parties. And then one of the people said, look, we've got this film and it's the second time the director's made a movie, and none of the actors are famous, and it's, you know, and there's not much money. Would you be interested? And I was like, well, of course I'm interested. I just, it was all, you know, icing on the cake for me. So I got the job. I can remember sitting at a bar at the Carlton Hotel in Cannes, having this conversation, and someone said, well, great. Well, then, you know, can you do it? You know, and so I said yes to the job. But the most amazing thing about that job was that because it wasn't any famous actors and it wasn't a famous director. I mean, obviously Danny Boyle became an Oscar winning famous director, but back then no one had heard of him. So they let me do what I wanted to do. They didn't control anything, and that's very rare in our business. The most fortunate thing was that opportunity to create something that was my idea, and I worked with an art director, and between us, we came up with this great way of promoting this film. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I mean, and it just bizarrely, it just blew up and took off, and it became like the coolest film ever. Mm-hmm. And everything related to it, like all the actors became famous. Danny became the director. Danny Boyle became super famous. I became famous. Then I started working for Vanity Fair and Vogue shortly after that job, because, but it's like anything in life. I think you can't quite believe it's happening. And in looking back, it's like, wow, that was amazing what just happened. And, you know, but it can happen. It can just happen to anyone. No one knows. It's like having a hit record. At the time of recording it, you don't know if it's going to be a hit record.
Absolutely.
And it could, you know, it could be one of those things. So,
yeah. Since then, you've shot everybody, practically anybody who's anybody, from Angelina Jolie to Jack Nicholson and so many others. But I do want to ask you about The Sitters. Is it necessary to establish a good rapport with your subjects, or do you consider them as perhaps, you know, almost as objects? You have to keep that distance. And can you do a good job of someone who is difficult to get through to?
Okay, that's a couple of interesting, really good questions there. I consider myself to be a portrait photographer. So the idea is that you're trying to capture their personality, whatever that may be. And the thing is with actors is they don't really always let you in. So it's really important to build up a rapport with them and get to know them and disarm them. You know, you need to almost befriend them and connect to them. It's really important, this connection thing, because in connecting to someone, and it could be about anything, you could talk about anything. You familiarize yourself with them, and then they kind of feel like they can trust you and you know them. And then that's the beginning of the process, really. It is a process. Sometimes, the second question, you know, sometimes it really is hard. Sometimes they come in and they're in a bad mood, or they're annoyed, or they're, you know, they're just regular people like us. We all have issues and problems that we need to deal with. I just did a shoot in Paris, and all the actors, they came in character. So you're photographing that person as that character, which obviously makes it a lot easier because you can't really tell them what to do. It's more about the composition and the lighting and all of that sort of thing. So it's, every job is different. It varies from commission to commission, you know, and that's what makes it really interesting, you know, the fact that it's never the same.
And do you actually know what you want to achieve ahead of a shoot, or do you kind of surprise yourself? I mean, in a way, these sitters come with their own set of surprises. They come with their own character. As you said, they show up perhaps in the wrong clothes, in the sense that you might not have planned for that particular color. And also with their character and their mood on the day. How much of it is down to planning, and how much of it is you responding to the situation that you're faced with at that moment?
Well, planning is important. You know, I try and do a little bit of homework. You know, if it's not someone I'm familiar with, then I'll do a little bit of research, even down to the music you play in the studio. You know, it's really trying to make your person, your sitter, as comfortable as possible. You know, there's so many stories of people that, you know, you win them over by just playing the right song. It's amazing. You know, and there is a certain amount of planning, but with every shoot, I always leave room for spontaneity, for change. Like, I might change my mind about something. I might change my ideas. Because again, that's real portraiture. You have to deal with that person when they come in and deal with the circumstances. But usually they're very professional, and they, you can discuss the idea, and they either love it or hate it, you know, and sometimes you can still win them over. I mean, I've had actors hate my ideas, but because I've convinced them to do it. And it really is, it's a sort of a fun process. And once they get into it, then the whole session becomes a joy, you know.
The thing is, when I look at your portraits, your website is obviously full of wonderful portraits, but a lot of them seem to have an element of humor in them. And to me, it seems to be a trademark of Lorenzo Aduce's photography, you know, this element of humor. And you're also telling a story with the props and with what's going on. And some are a bit perhaps mysterious. What's going on? For example, the Bill Nye portrait, when he's on a bed, and then another point, he's actually dancing on a piano, and it's all quite mysterious in a way.
Again, I think, say, in the situation with Bill Nighy, I convinced him to, I said, I want to create this party scene with you. So it's all make-believe. So you're a reveler of the sort of 1920s, and I want you to wear this tuxedo, but I just don't want you to wear trousers. So I want you to wear your long shorts, boxer shorts, mm-hmm. with suspenders to hold up your socks and a bow around your neck. And I want... You know, this devastation of this reveler, like empty bottles of champagne on the bed. And he said, well, I don't drink.
Ah, okay.
He says, I don't drink and I don't party. And he said, I'm not going to not wear my trousers. So I said, and then I showed him this great picture of Frank Sinatra backstage walking around with just his boxer shorts on. And so I convinced him to do it because, you know, if they can relate to something that's cool. Mm-hmm. And then once we started, he just got into it. So a lot of my shoots, people love the ideas and then they run with it because they're actors. But sometimes they don't want to give you anything. And if they don't want to give you anything, it becomes a challenge. But the challenge is what makes it fun. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like hunting, you know, not that I'm a hunter, but you know, you it's not easy to go hunting and you find your, you know, the thing that you want to shoot. Not that I'm against all of that, but you know, it's a process. And even if they don't give you anything, you can still get wonderful portraits and wonderful shots, you know, and sometimes their distance is really them. They are distant people. Mm-hmm. You know, they are unfriendly people but I always try and inject a bit of humor, sense of humor. Everyone's got a sense of humor.
But once you do crack through and the objective is achieved, do they become friends?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of actors have become friends over the years and even, you know, we're all very busy people. So a lot of people say, oh, you must have lots of actor friends. I mean, I do have good friends. But we're all so busy. They're going from like Ewan McGregor, who was obviously in Trainspotting. That was the film that launched his career. You know, he's making movie after movie. So I very rarely get to see him. We connect via email or a phone call every now and again. But when we get to work together again, it's our opportunity to see each other. Mm-hmm. So sometimes work is more social.
You just pick up where you left off, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's wonderful because there's that familiarity there's that trust, you know. Mm-hmm. Photography, a lot of it is about trust and that you know you've got their back, you know, you're not going to embarrass them. And they play along with your ideas because you've got a lot of integrity. So it's great. And I do get commissioned by the same people because they trust me, you know. So that's a wonderful thing to have that. Trust it from people.
Indeed. Now, going back to the style of your photographs, I find your photographs are very painterly. They have a soft quality to them that, to me, at least comes across as incredibly human and very direct. In fact, I found myself kind of pulling back from the screen as I was going through them because it felt like you placed me as a viewer in a space that was almost too close for comfort with the subject. It's that direct. Now, you studied art and art history, as we've seen. Do you look at art when it comes to composing your photos and getting the right color and feel? Is it inspiring for you or is it just innate to you? You automatically know what it is you want to achieve, what composition you have in mind.
It's a bit of everything, you know. Sometimes I do know what I want to accomplish in the composition and the feel and the mood. My approach to photography and lighting all stems from looking at great works of art. You know, I don't look at magazines. I look at other photographers' art, mm-hmm. but I don't look at magazines. I'm not invested in that way. I would rather go to a gallery, an art gallery, and look at the real masters, mm-hmm. you know, the incredible artists, you know, a Caravaggio, mm-hmm. and look at the light and the way it works on the body. you know, there's so much more to be gained by looking at that for composition. And I think all of the great portrait photographers are inspired in that way, you know. And it never gets boring, you mm-hmm. know, to go to an art gallery and look at art and be moved by it.
Absolutely. And you're not only looking at art, you're actually contributing art to these art galleries and museums, and we'll come to that later. But mm-hmm. I'm looking at a really wonderful photo at the moment that you made.
Okay, that's an actress called Rebecca Ferguson.
She's indoors in a darkened interior, and there's a, you know, dark furniture and these beautiful pewter or silver objects in front of her, vessels. And the light on them, the quality of the light, is it's exactly like a Dutch interior, you know, a still life of the 17th century. It's absolutely beautiful.
Rebecca is, I mean, she's a very Swedish actress, very successful. She's, I think, in the Mission Impossible movies with Cruise. I mean, she's, I photographed this in Bruges in a few years ago, and she was in a TV show called The White Queen. So this was something where I had to do some publicity shots for the show. And she was just, I mean, you know, to go on a film set is just the most incredible thing, because you've got all these incredible talents that come together to create history right before your eyes. I can remember doing this shot, and it was like, wow, this environment is so, it's like a painting. So I wanted to capture that sort of luminescent sort of pre-Raphaelite type innocence in her skin. And so I mean she got it straight away. As an artist, she understood what I was trying to capture. This was a really rewarding shoot to do, because it's very much, I love period movies, I love period dress, and it's just, you know, it's an honor to sort of come on set and do these things and have the freedom. This was a particularly lovely shoot that I did.
It really grabbed me, because for me, it's a painting. It's, you know, I yeah. love the way you composed it. Everything is right. The props are right. And even the centrality of the figure, how she's placed, this perfect symmetry, and her skin glows, and it creates such a beautiful contrast with the darkened interior. You mentioned Pre-Raphaelite. I'll go further back. For me, it's a Vermeer.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'll see that a lot in my photography. You will see very direct, almost like reference points. Like, you know, I did this Tilda Swinton shoot, and we shot her in Scotland, near her home. And we thought about the clothing and the way we wanted it to look. And it really did look like Dutch paintings, you know, of that period, and just stunning, because when it comes together like that, and the light is right and the location is right, it's you've accomplished what you set out to accomplish, which is, you know, is so rewarding.
How much of the planning is directed by you, and how much of it is dictated to you in a way? I mean, for example, when you do shoots for an advertising campaign, I would imagine that the director, the creative director, would be the one dictating to a certain extent the, you know, how the shoot should look and how the clothes should be interpreted, or this sort of thing. Do you have creative freedom in sort of contributing ideas and maybe changing things around, even though initially it would have been planned in one way?
Yes, absolutely. We do have creative input. Not always freedom. It depends what the shoot is. If you're shooting for a magazine, then you have complete free rein to do what you want to do. If you're shooting an advertising campaign or a film poster, they usually have concepts and ideas that they want you to accomplish. But there's always the reason that they work with you is because they want your input. You know, they want your creativity. Otherwise, you know, what's the point? So, you know, it's really important to bring that to the table, and years of experience mm-hmm. gives them that confidence that you're going to do that in the correct way. You know, you're going to surprise them and give them some really interesting lighting, or, you know, or deal with the talent in a certain way, you know.
Now, we've talked about light, and light is really one of your principal media, I would say. Is it the most important factor for you when you're planning a shoot, and how do you plan for it, and do you have a favourite lighting style?
No favourite lighting style at all. I'm very flexible. You have to create for the situation. So I'm really very good at lighting. I'm very familiar with what I'm trying to accomplish and how to get there. That's really important. But, you know, sometimes I'll do a shoot and I won't work with any lights. There won't be any lights. And I'll just use natural light, or there won't even be any natural light. Sometimes it's just a light bulb in a house. And what you do is one gets to a certain point where one's confident enough to know that they can always create a beautiful image, and it's not about you lighting it. Sometimes it could be just the simplest thing that could create the most captivating picture. And that, again, is why painters, you know, the light in paintings is just phenomenal of the last, you know, few hundred years, because, well, certainly the last 200 or 300 years, because, you know, they're trying to capture a mood more than. So understanding lighting is really about capturing mood, and you can do it with a mirror reflecting light in, or you can do it with a candle. You know, a lot of those great paintings of the 19th century were lit with candles. So it's taking that influence and incorporating it into what you do.
Would you say that there's a particular style that would immediately tell the viewer that it's a photograph by Lorenzo Agius?
I don't know. I think people think people say, oh, I love your style. It's like, do I have a style? I don't know. I'm so confused as an artist, like, in a sense of, I like everything, and I like to be influenced by everything. And so I don't feel like I have a particular style as far as lighting. I always try and capture personality. That's my thing. It's really important for, I'm a portrait photographer, so I want to capture that personality. And I also want the viewer to look at my pictures and go, I kind of feel like I know them. Because if you look at one of my pictures and you laugh, then I've succeeded, because I've connected. And if I can connect with the artist and through me, my camera, my lens, then the public can connect to that artist, then I've succeeded, because that's what you always want to do. You want to capture someone's deepest emotions, whether it's sadness or happiness or laughter, or, you know, it's just about capturing that emotion.
So we've spoken about commissions and we've spoken about creative freedom. Are there times when you actually sort of self-commission a shoot? You decided that you'd like to shoot a particular person or a particular scene or a particular narrative, and you go ahead and do your own shoot?
Do people say, do you do your own personal work? The thing is, no, I don't, because my work is my personal work. My commissions are still my personal work. I did a shoot a while back for Italian Vanity Fair, where I had a ballet dancer called Sergei Polunin, who's a very famous dancer known as the bad boy of ballet, covered in tattoos.
Fantastic, fantastic.
And I've always wanted to do the shoot underwater. So I had to convince his publicist, which was really hard, to let me photograph him underwater. So he comes to the studio, and he didn't know this. And when I told him of my idea, he was like, I don't believe this. This is incredible. Because the ballet that I'm writing is about a boy that goes into the water, into a pond, and comes out a man. You know, it was serendipitous. You know, the timing of it was, and that happens to me so often, that I'll have an idea and the person who I'm working with has the same idea. So you connect.
Of course.
And that was a really rewarding shoot. Not the easiest shoot, but incredibly rewarding. Mm-hmm. And what made it difficult was obviously you're shooting underwater, so you can't really talk to someone.
Of course. Of course. So directing and all that. And in fact, I don't think I saw any other photographs of yours which are underwater.
Well, this was the only shoot I've done because I could never get an actor to do it because they're too precious. You know, their publicists and their managers wouldn't allow them to do it because it's too time consuming. But this guy, he's a ballet dancer. You know, he's been dancing since the age of three. He struggled, you know, to be that good as a dancer. It's permanent struggle, you know, you're in pursuit of perfection. So he got what I was trying to do and he was the perfect subject for it. So it was a dream job, you know, it became, and that was my idea and I accomplished it. So that's me doing my personal work.
Let's take a break here and then we'll come back to find out more. This episode, originally recorded for the Treasures from Malta podcast series and now being broadcast on Campus FM, is a conversation between me, Francesca Balzan, and my guest, celebrity photographer Lorenzo Ajus. And we're back. Don't forget to go to our podcast page on www.patrimonio.org to see pictures and links to what we've just discussed with Lorenzo. Lorenzo, run us through a shoot. How involved do you get in preparing for a shoot? For example, do you design and determine the props and the lighting kind of well in advance? Do you start a discussion on these well ahead of the shoot with the artistic director? What happens?
Again, it depends what you're working for, who you're shooting for. So if I work for a film company or, you know, one of the streaming companies like Netflix or Showtime, any of those big companies, Apple, Amazon, what happens is they show you concepts that they've drawn up about, because you're basically you're promoting a movie or a TV show. So they come to you with all of these concepts. And then it's a process of just making those come to life. So we work with set builders, you know, as in movies, makeup, hair, styling for clothes. So it is a process that does involve a lot of people in some cases. You know, on some of my shoots, I've had up to, I don't know, 30 people involved, you know, which is, it's almost like a mini film crew.
Oh, sure.
You know, with assistants and lights and makeup and hair and styling and art directors, and it all becomes a big deal. So yeah, generally on most shoots, there's a process of, okay, how do we make these images come to life? You know, these ideas come to life.
And would an average shoot take about a day to bring together?
Yeah, usually, they vary greatly. I mean, I was just in Paris and I was doing a shoot for a new show, and we had a day to light the set, so that's the preparation that we have body doubles and they come in and we put them in position, so we know that when we go into the shoot the following day everything is already set and ready to go, because you know, if you're photographing actors and they're in the process of still acting, you're filming on set. So they don't break from character in these situations, and they want to come in and they want to do it and they want to leave. Mm-hmm. So if anything, you have to be a very well oiled machine. Sure. and well rehearsed. So once you get the talent, then off you go, you know, and a shoot could vary from, believe it or not, 10 minutes to a day or two. Mm-hmm. You know, it depends what it just varies from project to project.
Sure. Do you actually do the post-shoot processing of the images yourself, or is it done under your direction?
Yeah, generally it's I oversee it to a degree. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's a film poster, they come to you with the concepts, mm-hmm. the visuals, you execute the visuals,
then they take your photography away, and then they put it all together and make it happen that end. Sometimes I'm involved, and sometimes, you know, they take it on board, and they, the design agencies that design the film posters, they go off and they design the poster with your photography.
Sure.
And when that happens, I'm not usually involved. Mm-hmm. You know, my involvement stopped at taking the pictures.
So let's look at one film poster in particular. I know you've shot several portraits for film posters for many, many blockbuster films, but let's take Mamma Mia, for example. And there you have all the main characters in the same film poster, and they're all gesticulating, and they kind of overlay each other, sort of, so an arm overlays a leg or whatever it is. In that case, were they all shot in one session, or were they separate groupings and then they were sort of placed together?
Yes, because this film set was unbelievable. It was so incredible. It was shot in a massive studio in Pinewood in England, in the countryside. They built a Greek village in this studio, which was, I think it was originally built for the James Bond film, and they could control the light throughout the day. It was the most, it's, being on a film set is just incredible to see, and it's magical how they make it work. So we were shooting because they were filming there, so we got the talent together, and it was, we weren't too clear about what we wanted to do. Certainly the design agency weren't too clear, but they wanted to create a sort of fun atmosphere. And I had this idea. I said, you know, why don't we do this thing called the conga line, you know? And
that's exactly it.
and they were like, yeah, but we don't do the conga in the movie. And I said, but these are the kinds of things that people relate to weddings. And it's a great way to get everyone together, all in the same picture, working together, hands on each other, and having fun. So we got them very drunk. we got loads of champagne, and everyone was drinking, and everyone was getting merry, and they did the conga line for real.
I wish somebody videoed that.
That would have made an amazing film, because the fun thing is, when actors get into it, then they just become like children, and it just becomes funnier and funnier and funnier and more outrageous. And you, it's just like, you know, lighting the touch paper and watching the fireworks go off. This was a really wonderful shoot, because Meryl Streep, for instance, she hates doing photo shoots. She kind of doesn't want to do them, and we were lucky to even get her. But she's such an important character in the film. I mean, she'd obviously had bad experiences, but once we started shooting it, she was there 150%, like enjoying the process with the other actors. And sometimes it's great when you work with a group of actors, because then they can't misbehave. You know, sometimes you get actors and egos and you get dramas, but when they're all together, they're so familiar with each other that it kind of, all of that disappears, and then you're just dealing with people just having fun, you know, which is wonderful.
Oh, great. How do you keep a straight face through all this and remember to be, to concentrate on the camera?
It's hard. Sometimes I've done some shoots that have been so funny that I have to shoot on a tripod, because it's like everyone is just laughing behind, you know, and everyone's having such a great time. And also the opposite end of that, you know, I've done shoots that have been so moving, you're moved to tears, like everyone's moved to tears. So when actors give you this special gift that they have, it's really can be moving. It can make you laugh and it can make you cry. And then you know if it's moving you, then it's going to move your viewer.
I would say that is one of the hallmarks of your work, actually.
I did this one shoot many years ago, one of my very first shoots with an amazing violin player called Yehudi Menuhin.
Uh-huh.
And Yehudi was conducting the London Philharmonic Orchestra with Itzhak Perlman. And we went into Abbey Road Studios, and we were in Studio 3, which is the famous studio where they recorded Sgt. Pepper's. And I put up a background, and I knew how I wanted to photograph him, and I wanted him playing his violin. I shot three rolls of film. It was so moving. We were in tears. I mean, it was just to watch this incredible man, like, who was in his 90s. It was so moving. So in that sense, my work is incredibly rewarding, and you get blessed with amazing opportunities to hear people sing to you and play their instruments, yeah, and act to you. And it's just because we're all artists trying to create something, and it's just a very beautiful situation to be in.
It's almost as though you're occupying the front row in history, in epoch-making situation.
Absolutely, and sometimes when I'm shooting, I know that I'm creating something that is going to become. I've always had that thing about creating something that becomes iconic. Because there's so much photography out there and so many photographers that, you know, what are we going to do to create something different that's going to move people, that is going to be remembered? So sometimes that takes the lead on mm-hmm. your shoot, you know, so you strive to get that magic.
Now, assignments have taken you all over the world, but which would you say has been the most challenging and unusual shoot?
Oh, I mean, challenging, sometimes things are challenging technically. You know, depending on the weather, you know, the time of the shoot, just the timing, trying to get the talent to the set on time to shoot them. Things, I mean, I've had shoots where I've flown to Prague with my whole team of people to photograph actors for a film poster, and then the day of the shoot, the director says, "I don't want them to work with you, we're behind schedule." And that's challenging because you're so ready to go to work, and then everything changes. And, you know, and meanwhile, it's just cost the film company, you know, several hundred thousand euros.
Of course. Mm.
And so they're not happy about it. So there's many different challenges. Usually the talent, the actors or the musicians, they're not the challenge because they want to do a good job. They're there professionally to accomplish something that's memorable and beautiful, hopefully, you know, and that's what we're all trying to do. We're all working together as a team.
Yeah.
So hopefully the challenges are, I mean, we joked about not putting film in the camera
earlier on.
That's happened to me where I've been shooting and it's like, wow, this is the longest roll of film I've ever shot. And then I realized that, of course, it's been going on for too long. So, but all you can do is laugh, and it's a rookie mistake, and just load the camera and carry on, you know.
Start again.
Start again. We've all got those stories,
Now, Lorenzo, your name has long been associated with film, and we've discussed film posters and something that you do, and you've created iconic ones, things like Sliding Doors film poster. The film went on to become a blockbuster, but also the image, the film poster itself, is probably blazoned in everyone's mind. But in 2010, you actually officially opened the 63rd Cannes Film Festival with the mayor. And on that occasion, too, your photographic works were displayed throughout the city and on its most prominent buildings. And you also received a street exhibition. So you've been exhibiting quite a bit as well as an artist. You've got several other exhibitions under your belt. You are collected by museums, such as the National Portrait Gallery. There are 6 works in the National Portrait Gallery by you. Some of them were given by you and others were acquired by the NPG. Tell me about that process, and how relevant is it for you that you're actually one of the artists who are within the collection of the NPG?
I mean, it's a great honor, isn't it? I mean, I as a student, whenever I'm in London, I'll go to the National Portrait Gallery. I mean, it's, as I say, I love going to art galleries. So that way you get to see amazing portrait paintings, because it's a portrait gallery, paintings, photography, To be asked many years ago to initially put work in, I think one of my first pieces was of Kate Winslet, when she was very young. I mean, it's such a great honor, you know, and they do rely on contributions because they don't necessarily purchase the photography or the art, the paintings. They are contributed to because it's a free gallery. You know, some of the greatest painters of all time and photographers of all time are exhibited there. So to just be amongst them it's a wow factor. And it's like, wow, they really like me. They like my work that much that they want to exhibit it. So it's a wonderful honor. And I'm all for supporting galleries and exhibiting my work because it's just a brilliant place to be, you know.
We must make sure that you're represented within our national collection as well.
Absolutely. I'd love to be. It's so interesting because my parents, in a way, left Malta to give themselves a chance at life in a different way. And it's funny that I sort of see myself going back to Malta. So it's come full circle. And the opportunities, I think, after the war, Second World War, weren't great in Malta. You know, it was very difficult, very poor background. So to have accomplished what I've done and then to be able to take it back to Malta would be, that's the ultimate dream.
That's amazing. Have you ever actually shot in Malta?
I've never worked there, although they do make lots of movies there. They're in Gozo and Malta. There's fantastic studios and the light is so beautiful and they've made some incredible movies there. So I'm surprised I've not gone back, bizarrely. It's almost like eluded me. Because that would be the perfect dream to work in my kind of effectively my home ground, home territory. So that would be a dream, and I hope it happens.
Okay, so let this podcast be a sort of a sign to all to make it happen, because we really must have an exhibition of yours here in Malta as well.
Oh, that again, that would be an honor. You know, it would be an amazing thing. You know, to come from such sort of humble beginnings, which is an inspiration, I think, that I can pass on to anyone. I didn't have the best education. You know, it was a struggle in life and my parents weren't wealthy or anything like that. So I always think that if I can do it, other people can do it, you know, and that's my inspiration to students, art students. You've just got to be passionate about it and follow your dreams, you know, and dream big and you'll accomplish it. You know, but self-belief is everything in life, you know, regardless of what's going on with the economy and the times, you know.
That's absolutely true. You just have to persist and really believe in yourself and put a lot of hard work into it.
Yeah. And, you know, if any of the great artists, they never had it easy. I mean, I'm talking about painters from, you know, Picasso, Van Gogh, you know, I mean, no one had it easy. Everyone struggled in many ways. But I think if you're persistent, I think you get rewarded in life by the universe. So I think it's accomplishable by everybody.
Lorenzo, tell me about the tools you use. You're a Canon man. In fact, ambassador for Canon cameras since 2008. But have you looked at different forms of image making and photography, such as historic methods like the pinhole camera? Have you been experimenting with these earlier forms?
I think probably when I was younger, I was more, because for me, it was just an investigation into photography. And obviously, when I was younger, we were shooting film and I became a printer as well, a black and white printer. I loved printing. So that really is like creating, your work fully. So I would shoot the film, process the film, print the prints. And that's a great knowledge to have. I've experimented with different cameras, twins lens cameras, medium format, large format plate cameras, 10x8. So I've worked with many formats but I think nowadays the digital format commercially is so widely accepted as this is what we want you to shoot on because it's cheaper and it's quicker and they can see it as it comes into the, you know, the monitor and they can see what you're doing. Whereas 15 years ago, I'd shoot a roll of film. No one knew anything. No one knew what I was getting. So I'd love to, actually. I mean, I do experiment occasionally with other formats and other cameras. Being a Canon ambassador, you have to sort of stick to the brand. You know, you're contracted to stick to the brand. Otherwise,
of course.
You know, but even just playing with a phone, you know, and a camera on a phone, the quality of photography and the quality of phone cameras now is...
The development in phone cameras has been so phenomenally fast.
Yeah.
And everybody feels that they're a photographer. But in a way, it's opened it up to a lot of other people as well. And, you know, there's that branch of photography as well, which is starting to become really interesting, even from the documentary point of view. Mm-hmm. Everybody's a journalist. Everybody's a photojournalist.
I think it's amazing. You know, there was a time when people didn't take photographs unless they had... You know, if you were going on holiday, you'd buy a little disposable camera to take with you. And when you got back from your holiday, you'd take the camera in and they'd process the film and throw the camera away. Now you've got a camera that's 10 times the quality. It's instant. I mean, how amazing is that for photography? You know, everyone is a photographer all of a sudden. Everyone, you know, we've got a camera in our pocket. And I always thought that the phone was going to become the camera of the future, and it has done.
Hence the interest in photography as well. I think it's, as an art, it has really been on the ascendant. And of course, it's accepted as a fine art as well, as it should be. And we've seen increasing interest in it. With exhibitions, not as much as perhaps with paintings or other forms of contemporary art, but certainly there is growing interest in photography always. Lorenzo, your work has been published in all the most prestigious magazines, such as Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, Sunday Times Magazine, Grazia. The list just goes on and on. But it looks like there's something bigger in the works. Your website has a single-line teaser. Lorenzo is currently working on his first retrospective book. So tell us more about it. When is it out?
Well, this is like the it's a very interesting one, because everybody, my family, my friends, everybody that knows me is like, when are you going to do a book? When are you going to do this book? It's very interesting, because the photographers that I really admired, they produce books very much towards the end of their careers. It's like a retrospective of, look at what I've done, look what I've accomplished. Mm. But then books became easy to self-publish, and everyone could make a book. You could make a book. Anyone could make a book. So for me, it lost its appeal in a way. So my thing was always about creating this retrospective book of sort of 30 years of work. But you know, the thing is, when do you stop? It's like collecting. When do you stop collecting pictures to put in your book? Because I'm constantly working. So you go, oh, well, maybe at the end of this year, we'll start to look at the negatives from what I shot 25 years ago, all my shoots for Vogue and Vanity Fair and all that, and start to piece it together. But when you continue to work, your career isn't coming to an end, so a retrospective doesn't really apply. It's a difficult one. But yeah, I am currently working on it, and it's a case of putting images together. But again, if you've been working for 30 years, you know, and I've done thousands of shoots, and I've got thousands and thousands and thousands of shoots of negatives, it's a lot. It's a mammoth task, you know, and
I mean, how to go about selecting what to represent yourself with in these 30 years. But I do have a solution for you. Yes, there is a point where you have to stop and say, this book is going to be up till this point. So call it Volume 1.
That's a very good idea. I never thought of that.
And just start working on Volume 2 immediately afterwards.
It's interesting because, you know, as a photographer, sometimes you get a shoot and you go, wow, that's one of the most beautiful shoots I've done. And I could have done it like the shoot that I did in Paris. I was really proud of the shoot. You have to stop at some point and start to put this thing together. And it's hard. I think it's a thing for a lot of, I think it's the thing that a lot of artists struggle with, yeah. Especially someone from my period of time. Whereas I think, you know, if you're in your early 20s or your late teens, the world is more of a disposable kind of quicker, you know, you can turn a book around, you can self-publish, you can turn it around in a matter of weeks. Yeah. No, I mean, it's definitely in the process of happening, and it's just, it's, you know, as I mentioned before, you know, I've got over the next few, well, the next month and a half, I've got potentially three big shoots in three different cities around the world. So your mind gets distracted because there's so much production that goes into shoots that it's like, well, I'm doing this, I just have to shelve it for the moment and then start to work on this job that is how I make my living. And so it's hard to get the time or you know, to actually sit down for more than a day and actually make it happen.
What it is you need is to have a sabbatical, preferably in Malta, where you're cut off from all your actual work and just review your work of these last 30 years and make your selection for your volume one.
It sounds like a perfect plan, and the sabbatical could probably be a few months.
Indeed.
It's certainly a few months worth of work to piece everything together, you know.
Bridging the summer months, of course, so you can get some swimming in as well.
Oh, of course. We need a little downtime.
So that's you sorted, Lorenzo. Well,
there you go.
I'm going to let you go here. I must thank you very, very much for your time and for sharing and just learning about your process, understanding what goes into these wonderful shoots that you do and helping us appreciate even further your beautiful art. It really is exquisite. We will be posting up links to the photos that we've mentioned and a number of works of yours. Thank you once again for your time and for your beautiful art. We hope to see more of it in Malta in an exhibition in the near future.
I look forward to that as well. Yeah, thank you so much for your time as well. It was wonderful talking to you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Treasures from Malta on Campus FM. This was originally recorded as a podcast, and there are pictures and links to all we've discussed on the Fondazione Patrimonio Malti website under the podcast section. That's www.patrimonio.org.